She hadn't said much at all since they'd been recruited to Operation Watchtower, not even when she and Copano were alone. Occasionally, he caught her staring daggers at Walker. Ran resented this whole thing, and since Copano had more willingly gone along with the arrangement, she probably resented him, too. Behind the wheel, Copano eased them out into Abu Dhabi's stop-and-go traffic. He smiled, but caught himself before Ran or Walker saw. Abu Dhabi wasn't nearly as crowded, and the glittering skyscrapers were mostly new and ostentatious, compared to Lagos's gilded chaos. Yet this place still reminded him of home. Maybe it was all the bad drivers. Sports cars weaving through traffic at breakneck speeds, their operators paying more attention to their phones than the roads. Big men, probably, on important business. Copano gripped the wheel and got into the flow. He glanced over at Walker, wondering what his father would think of him now, driving around this secret agent lady, on a mission. Walker, as it happened, was in the middle of thumbing through crime scene photos. Copano caught sight of a man's body smashed on a sidewalk, dark blood and broken glass all around him, and gagged.
"Ugh! What are you looking at?"
"These?" Walker asked innocently. "Photographs of Einar's victims." Copano shook his head, suddenly hot despite the air conditioning. He pulled at his collar and loosened his tie. He was dressed like a salesman, dress shirt, tie, slacks. The women both wore white tunics, khakis, and headscarves. Walker also wore a light brown jacket to conceal her sidearm.
"Put them away," Copano said, waving his hand. "You already know what happened to them. Now it's just morbid."
"Reminds me what kind of monster we're dealing with," Walker said. "Also, think it might be motivation to get our friend the Sheikh to work with us." She held up one of the photos, a squadron of men in body armor, ripped practically limb from limb, so that Ran could see it. "What do you think of that plan, Ran?" With a quickness that surprised Walker, Ran slapped the photo away.
"Get that out of my face!"
"I need you motivated, too," Walker said, sliding the pictures back into their envelope. "That's all." Copano cleared his throat. He had decided that if Ran was going to be the malcontent, he would try to be the diplomatic one. Maybe get on Walker's good side. She didn't seem like such a bad lady, kidnapping and chip implementation aside. She was letting him drive, after all.
"You really think those pictures will motivate the Sheikh to help us?" Copano asked, giving Walker a chance to explain her plan and act all in charge.
He found that adults liked that. "They would motivate me," Walker replied. "Knowing there was a psycho guard out there killing people, that he knows where I live, that I could be next on his list..." Walker shrugged. "Maybe we'll get lucky and catch Einar in the middle of trying to murder the guy."
"You have a strange definition of luck," Copano said.
"Anyway, it's the best lead we've got. We haven't been able to pin down the identities of many of Einar's former... employers. Only got this one because his daughter, Rabia, right, got taken by the harvesters. She told them who her father was while she was trying to talk them out of killing her." Staring out the back window, Ran spoke without looking at Walker.
"While we are here, you should arrest the Sheikh. He works with the Foundation."
Copano watched Walker out of the corner of his eye. She had a way of changing the subject whenever the Foundation came up. She even avoided saying its name when discussing Einar's victims, even though membership was what they all had in common.
"One thing at a time," Walker said simply.
Copano tapped his hands happily on the wheel.
"Then that means you will arrest them, eventually."
"I've got no jurisdiction to arrest anyone, or hell, even be in this country, Walker replied. Point is, the world is more complicated than you two make it out to be. Rand fell silent again. They had left the city behind, trading the grid of tall buildings for a highway that cut through the desert. Even this highway seemed opulent to Copano, with its equidistant palm trees and patches of soothing emerald green grass.
"I think my dad would love it here," he said. "He used to tell me about the world being complicated too, Agent Walker. It's how he explained ripping people off."
Walker stared at him for a moment, then turned to look out her own window. Copano drove them on in silence. Led by the GPS, Copano steered them off the highway and onto a private road. The pavement glittered. Copano swore it was laced with gold flakes. No one said a word until the palace came into view, the building rising out of the desert like something from a fairy tale, all sandstone columns and parapets, a parking lot out front, cluttered with luxury cars, shaded by groves of olive trees. Copano shook his head. The audaciousness and splendor were like nothing he'd ever seen. Even his dad couldn't have imagined this place in his wildest dreams.
"Someone actually lives here?" Copano asked.
"Crazy, isn't it?" Walker replied. As the grandeur of the place wore off, Copano noticed the guards. There were dozens of them, some posted outside the front door, others on the roof and its walkways. They all wore white thobes and carried huge machine guns. Copano swallowed.
"They know we're coming, right?"
"They know," Walker said flatly. Operation Watchtower arranged to free up some of the Sheikh's questionable international assets in exchange for 15 minutes. Rand leaned forward to peer up at the many guards.
"Are you sure about this?" she asked. "We were not exactly kind to Rabia when we last met. They may hold a grudge."
"Not kind to her?" Walker asked. "Way I heard it, you saved her from getting burned to death by a bunch of religious yahoos."
"Yeah," Copano said. "But then we forced her to teleport us."
"And she got home safe, eventually," Walker countered. "We're here trying to catch the guy who got her into all that mess. They'll cooperate."
"If you say so," Rand said.
The three of them got out of the car. Immediately, Copano sensed eyes upon them. Eyes and guns. All the guards shifting or stopping in their patrols, angling their bodies towards them. Copano let Walker take the lead, the woman walking confidently towards the palace's double-door entrance. But he put himself between the gunman and Rand, making sure that his skin was hardened.
"That's far enough."
A guard stepped out from the shade of a tree and held up his hand. Unlike the others, his thobe was black, and he wore a golden pin on his lapel. A boss of some kind. He approached the trio with his rifle ready, but low.
"I'm Karen Walker. We have an appointment with the Sheikh."
"You have an appointment," the guard said.
He gestured at Copano and Ran.
"These two may not enter. Their kind cause nothing but trouble."
Copano frowned at that. Rand stared dead-eyed at the guard. Walker looked over her shoulder.
"Stay here," she told them.
"What if you get in trouble?" Copano asked.
"I'll be fine," Walker said.
Copano and Rand exchanged a look, but what could they do? If something happened to Walker in there, if she was killed, they'd be shocked into unconsciousness and probably soon be dead themselves. That was a lot of trust to place in someone.
"Be careful," Rand said coldly.
The guard led Walker into the palace, leaving Rand and Copano alone with the dozens of steely-eyed guards. Copano shifted uncomfortably.
"This sucks," he said. "I wanted to see inside."
There was movement up on the wall, Among the dour guards and their identical thobes, Kopano spotted a flash of color. There was a girl up there in a golden hijab and a leopard print dress. Kopano couldn't be sure at this distance, but he guessed it was Rabia. He raised a hand to awkwardly wave. She peered down at him and ran for a moment, then disappeared back into the palace.
"Everyone's so friendly," Kopano said.
Ran frowned at him. Then she licked her thumb and rubbed at a spot on his collar.
"You have something on you," she said. "Is this blood?"
"Damn. Good thing Walker didn't notice," Kopano said with relief.
He reached into his pants pocket, moving cautiously in case any of their hawk-eyed guards thought he was reaching for a weapon, and flashed Ran the blood-stained microchip that he'd pulled out of his head.
"What?"
Ran said.
"I got it out," Kopano said. "The chip."
Ran's eyes lit up. She moved in closer to Kopano, speaking quietly.
"How did you do it?"
Kopano demonstrated passing the fingers of one hand through the palm of his other hand and wiggled his eyebrows.
"I don't know what I should do with it now," he said, pocketing the chip again. "Smash it, maybe, or..."
"No,"
Ran hissed.
"They might notice it has been disabled. Keep it on you at all times."
"Okay, right," Kopano said. "Smart."
Ran tilted her head and flipped her hair back so her scar was in view.
"Can you do mine?"
Kopano swallowed. "I don't know. Doing myself was one thing, but what if... I could touch your brain on accident, or I don't know what else. It's a big risk."
"A risk I am willing to take to get this thing out of me."
"Okay, but maybe I don't want to risk accidentally lobotomizing my friend."
Ran frowned at him. Kopano frowned back. Before anything else could be said, there was a small commotion at the palace gates. Rabia emerged from within, flanked by guards who struggled to match her purposeful stride. Kopano and Ran both tensed up as she approached.
"I know you,"
Rabia said by way of introduction.
"You two are from the academy, yes?"
Kopano looked at Ran. She regarded Rabia with her typically stubborn silence, so Kopano shrugged and took the lead.
"Sort of," Kopano replied. "Yeah."
"And now you are here with an American agent to hunt Einar?"
"It's kind of a secret mission," Kopano said.
"Good enough,"
Rabia said. She looked at the retinue of guards that continually inched closer.
"Step back," she snapped at them, "or you will incur my father's wrath."
Looking uneasy, the guards eased back a bit. One of them spoke into a walkie-talkie, probably notifying the Sheikh that his daughter had come into the open.
"We must speak quickly,"
Rabia said, urgent eyes locking first with Kopano and then with Ran.
"And then you will need to make a very quick decision. Understood?"
"Not really," Kopano said.
Rabia extended her hand, and a torrent of cobalt blue energy funneled forth. Where her energy hit the driveway, a glowing laurelite stone began to grow, making a noise like boots crunching over broken glass.
"My father will not help you find Einar,"
Rabia spoke briskly, her eyes on Kopano and Ran as the stone grew.
"After your fight with him in Iceland, Einar used me to teleport into a Foundation facility and steal a Mogadorian spacecraft. Then he let me return here. He promised not to hurt my family during his little jihad. My father knows this. He will not risk upsetting Einar or the Foundation by informing."
"Please, Sheikah," interrupted one of the guards. "You must go back inside. This is not appropriate."
The guard tried to take Rabia by the elbow. In response, she shoved him with her telekinesis and sent him flying into the side of a nearby Porsche, the glass of the driver's side window shattering from the impact. Nervous and fidgeting with their weapons, the rest of the guards took a number of paces back.
"Why are you telling us this?"
Kopano asked. Next to him, Ran picked up a handful of loose gravel, prepared to charge them with her legacy if matters deteriorated further.
Since my brother was cured,
Rabia continued as if she hadn't just assaulted one of her own guards,
my father wishes to wash his hands of matters related to the guard. The beating I endured by the harvesters shamed him. He claims our powers are against God. He will not let me practice. I have heard him on the phone discussing a surgery to implant an inhibitor in me.
Kopano instinctively touched his own temple.
So, you want us to what?
I will help you find Einar. I know where he will strike next, Rabia said. In exchange, I want you to take me to the academy. I wish to enroll there. You must decide now. My father's men will try to stop us.
She was right. Catching the drift of their conversation, the guards had started to creep closer, their weapons at the ready. The one with the walkie-talkie was speaking fast, probably relaying the situation to his boss in the black thobe.
Stop this madness, Sheka, one of the guards implored. Your father, he is coming.
The Lorelite stone was finished. Rabia stepped forward.
Well?
The thing is,
Kopano began, glancing nervously between Rabia and her armed protectors.
We can't really speak for—
Yes, Ran interrupted. We agree.
Good, Rabia replied.
Hold hands.
Kopano, flustered, let Ran grab his hand. Rabia then took hold of Ran.
We cannot leave without Walker, Ran said. Fine, Rabia replied. We'll get her.
A pair of guards lunged at them, but too late. Rabia brushed her fingers against the stone, and the world dropped out from under Kopano. He remembered this feeling from teleporting back and forth to Iceland, but that didn't mean he was used to it. He was swallowed up by the azure lauric glow, turned head over heels. And then, in the space of a breath, he was somewhere else. A courtyard, to be precise, inside the palace. They'd emerged from a second, smaller chunk of lorelite, hidden within a grove of palm trees.
Look, Ran said. You got to see inside after all.
Kopano, dizzy, barked a surprised laugh. It wasn't often that Ran made a joke. He didn't have time to take in the vast courtyard's bubbling fountains and sculptures. Dead ahead, Kopano spotted the guard in the black thobe, dragging Walker across the courtyard by the hair. She'd been roughed up a little and disarmed, but her scowl was still in place. They were joined by two more guards, and an imposing older man with a huge beard and a very expensive suit. Kopano took him to be Rabia's father, the Sheik. He was in the middle of berating Walker as their group hustled towards the palace entrance.
What corruption is this? The Sheik bellowed in Walker's face. Have you come to take my daughter? Is that it?
Ah, what?
Walker replied, clearly clueless.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Rabia adjusted her headscarves.
Shall we rescue your babysitter, then?
The three guards stepped into view with Kopano leading the way. One of the Sheik's guards, startled by their sudden appearance, raised his rifle and squeezed off a single shot. Kopano flinched as the bullet bounced off his hardened shoulder. It hurt, but on the same level as getting punched in the arm. He gritted his teeth and put on his scariest face. He needn't have bothered. The Sheik lunged at the guard and slapped him to the ground.
My daughter is with them, you fool!
In the commotion, Ran reached out with her telekinesis and yanked Walker away from the guards, not at all concerned with handling her gently. Kopano grabbed her out of the air, smiling at the look of utter bafflement on her face.
What have you done?
Walker asked through her teeth. Rabia waved at the Sheik.
I'm going to America, father. Don't try to get me back. Inshallah.
She grabbed Ran's hand, and in turn Ran put her hand on Kopano's shoulder. The Sheik and his men rushed towards them, but they wouldn't make it in time.
We can't take her,
Walker yelled.
We don't have the authority!
Then stop us,
Ran replied. There was nothing Walker could do. Rabia reached behind her, touched the Lorelight stone, and they were gone.
Chapter 28 Taylor Cook, Bayan Olzhgi Province, Mongolia. McLaughlin was dead. Taylor tried to heal the man, holding him by the sides of what was left of his head. But there was no spark, nothing for her legacy to rekindle. Gone. His face was a mess of burns from the Mogadorian blasters. There were places on his shoulders where his body armor had melted into his skin. Taylor gagged. She'd been around sickness and seen death before, had watched Einar force the Sheikh's guards to kill each other back in Dubai. This was worse somehow. She'd at least known McLaughlin a little, had been talking to him like 5 seconds ago. Was that really all it took to erase someone from the world? It almost seemed too easy. Still ducked down in the back seat, Taylor saw a tongue of flame burst out from under the hood of their truck. No time to ponder existential questions now. No time to freak out. She needed to move. But something had caught her eye when McLaughlin was shot. Something had fallen off his belt as he shoved Taylor down. The urge to flee was strong, but Taylor fought it. She groped around on the floor of the truck, fingers scraping over broken glass, until she hit upon something hard and plastic. A satellite phone. Hurriedly, she tucked the object into her parka. Black smoke was filling the inside of her truck. Outside, she could hear shouting, gunfire, and explosions. A full-fledged battle. She had no choice but to go towards it. With her telekinesis, Taylor knocked the battered back door off its hinges and leaped out into the freezing night. She kept low, blaster beams sizzling through the air from both sides. It was an ambush. The Mogadorians had come at the Foundation's convoy from the east and west. Mogadorians! Freaking Mogadorians! Taylor couldn't believe it. She'd seen the alien creatures on TV. Pale and sunken-eyed, tattoos on their scalps, hideous creatures that looked like they belonged in subterranean caverns. They'd failed in their invasion of Earth and been mostly eradicated or imprisoned. But Taylor had heard the rumors about pockets of them still at large, thriving in the world's more lawless places, avoiding the reach of Earthguard. Apparently, Western Mongolia was one of those places. The pieces clicked together for Taylor, despite the panic. The Foundation had come here to procure something from the fallen warship. The Mogadorians had discovered them, and not responded politely. She could see them out there at the edges of the floodlight's radiance, their pale faces and dark armor illuminated in bursts by their glowing blasters. A mercenary taking cover behind an overturned Humvee sprayed bullets at a pack of the aliens, and Taylor watched as they exploded into clouds of dust. Unreal. A blaster beam struck the burning truck she'd climbed out of. Taylor scrambled for cover and bumped right into a soldier doing the same.
"Shoot back, asshole!"
the mercenary screamed in her face. He didn't recognize her, but quickly registered that she was unarmed.
"Idiot! Where's your weapon?"
Taylor's heart beat savagely against her breastbone. Adrenaline flowed through her. They'd tried to prepare her for fights like this at the academy, but training rooms and obstacle courses didn't get across the blood, mud, and madness. She was in over her head, but that didn't matter. She was guard. And why were guard put on Earth? To kill Mogadorians.
"Here's my weapon,"
Taylor said to the soldier. With her telekinesis, Taylor hefted a door that had gotten blown off one of the trucks and sent it careening into the Mogadorian line. She was pretty sure that she sheared one of them clean in half.
"Holy shit!"
said the soldier.
He grabbed his walkie-talkie and shouted into it.
It's one of the assets! XO! It's one of the assets!
Taylor didn't see the XO anywhere. Couldn't really make out any individuals. It was chaos. The Moogs returned fire and she ran, pushing her way behind a group of mercenaries taking cover beneath the base of a floodlight. When a Moog stepped into view, she used her telekinesis to rip his blaster away. A mercenary collapsed beside her, and Taylor immediately smelled burned skin. He'd been shot in the shoulder, the Moog blaster searing through his armor. Taylor crouched down and pressed her hands against his chest, healing him. The soldier stared at her wide-eyed, then brushed her off, reoriented his rifle, and returned fire on the Moogs.
A thank you would be nice, Taylor said, her words drowned out by gunfire.
Someone grabbed her by the shoulder. Taylor reacted by spinning around and elbowing the person in the face. The XO ducked just in time, narrowly avoiding getting his nose broken.
The hell are you doing out here, Cook?
He screamed. A howling Mogadorian charged into view. These things were practically suicidal. As he leveled his blaster, Taylor jerked on it with her telekinesis, causing him to discharge the weapon right under his own chin. She tried not to think about how she'd learned that trick from Einar.
I'm helping you not die,
she responded to the XO. He smirked at that. Taylor noticed that his mouth was bloody, and that there was a sizable cut over his eyebrow. She reached out to touch him, but he slapped her hand away.
Don't waste your energy, he said. Focus on the ones that need it.
Taylor started to turn from him, but then came a piercing shriek of metal. The steel beam holding up the floodlight above them had taken too much fire. It teetered and started to fall, a half-ton of metal and spotlights collapsing right into their midst.
Go! Screamed the XO. Take cover inside the ship!
Chapter 29 Duan Fen. A nice restaurant, somewhere in the United States. Duan Fen had seen restaurants like this before, but only from the outside, while she waited with the executive's limo, scowling at anyone who got too close. Places like this, with its candlelight, white tablecloths, and clinking wine glasses, they weren't for people like her. They were for the wealthy, the powerful. Standing in the restaurant's dimly lit vestibule, Duan Fen felt the same rising nerves as she used to before a fight.
Why do you look like you're going to barf? Isabella asked her.
Duan Fen looked down at the Brazilian girl, who had settled comfortably onto one of the posh leather couches in the waiting area.
I feel out of place, she said.
Psh! Isabella dismissed this with a wave of her hand.
This spot isn't even that cool, and we are definitely the hottest people here.
Both of them wore new dresses. Isabella, a low-cut red one, Duan Fen, a more modest black sheath. They had gone shopping just that afternoon, spending some of the foundation's money on appropriate attire. Duan Fen had been relieved when Isabella offered, no, more like insisted, to pick out clothes for her. Duan Fen was glad they had kidnapped Isabella, and happier still that the girl had agreed to Einar's plan and stuck around. Einar was very serious all the time, always preaching about how they couldn't trust humanity. It got exhausting. And the Beast, or Number 5, as Duan Fen reminded herself to call him, wasn't exactly friendly. Having someone normal in their group made Duan Fen feel less insane for joining Einar's cause.
Ladies, shall we?
Einar said, as he returned from talking with the maitre d'.
A table for three just happened to open up. What did you do? Isabella asked, standing up. Mess with his brain? Why would I waste my energy on something so trivial? Einar replied.
He flashed the thick wad of bills he carried in his suit pocket.
The world's oldest form of mind control worked just fine.
Einar was polished as always.
He hadn't needed to buy a new suit for the occasion, but he did anyway. He held his arm out to Isabella. She laughed at him.
"What do you think this is? Some creepy date?" Isabella asked. "Ugh, do you have a boner right now?"
No, Einar replied.
"You aren't even my type. I was just being gentlemanly."
Isabella breezed past him with a snort, following the host into the dining room. Einar followed, Duan Fen smiling quietly as she came last. Those two were bickering non-stop, with Isabella usually the victor. Duan Fen knew the girl got under Einar's skin, but no matter how infuriating the exchange, Einar never did anything. He could have controlled Isabella's emotions and made her docile, assaulted her with his telekinesis, or sicked five on her. Instead, he showed restraint. It was one thing to talk about not using your legacies against other guard. It was another to actually live by those rules and self-police. Thanks to Isabella constantly needling him, Duan Fen had actually grown to trust Einar more. The host led them to a booth near the front window, twinkling city lights visible beyond the glass. Duan Fen sensed eyes on them. Surely the other diners must have been wondering how these three teenagers could afford to get a table here. She ran a hand over the stubble atop her head. It was strange to be on this side of the glass.
"Ah, now this is more like it," Einar said, settling in across from the girls. "This is how all our kind should be living."
Isabella's eyes flicked around the room.
"It's nice to be off that smelly-ass ship of yours, but aren't you worried about being seen?"
Einar waved this objection away.
"They won't expect us to be here. It's fine." "The Foundation will come back at you for what you've done," Duan Fen pointed out. "They'll come back at us." "Of course, but not tonight. And anyway, they've got nothing in their arsenal capable of stopping us. Or him."
Einar pointed towards the ceiling. Five was up there, in the air, keeping watch from the sky above the restaurant. He hadn't seemed offended that he wasn't invited to dinner. His broken skin would have been too conspicuous, and Isabella was far from willing to hold his hand during the entire meal.
"He'll be hungry, probably," Duan Fen said. "Do you see the way he scarfs down that fast food?" Isabella asked. "He's always hungry." "We'll get him some takeout," Einar said.
They studied their menus. The meals were complicated, and none of them had prices. When their skeptical-looking waiter arrived, Einar ordered himself a lobster. Isabella asked for a medium-rare filet mignon.
"Just a salad, please," Duan Fen said. "Dressing on the side."
Isabella stared at her once the waiter was gone.
"I need to teach you how to spend other people's money."
Einar cleared his throat.
"Where were you during the invasion, Duan Fen?"
She blinked at him. The question had come out of nowhere.
"Bangkok," she said. "Did you have your legacies already?" "No. They did not come until later."
Einar turned to Isabella.
"What about you?"
"None of your business," Isabella said, her lips pressed together.
"Now, is this the part where I ask you where you were, and you get to the point of this random conversation?"
Einar breathed out through his nose.
"Do you remember how Cetric Isra went on TV and demanded that Earth's governments turn over all human guard to him?"
Isabella shrugged.
"Yeah, I guess." "My father was an investment banker. My mother was an international lawyer. Normal people, I thought. When Cetric Isra made that request, they tried to tie me up."
The candlelight flickered in Einar's eyes as he looked out the window.
"They were part of a group called Moog Pro. You know what that means?"
Duan Fen shook her head.
"Idiot humans who supported the Moogs,"
Isabella said.
This makes sense. Your parents would be assholes.
Einar frowned at that, but continued on. My own parents were going to turn me over to some alien monster, simply because he ordered them to. I was weaker then. Didn't have much control of my legacies. But I fought.
Did you kill them?
Duan Fen asked.
No.
Einar drummed his fingers on the table. I used my legacy to turn them against each other. My mother hit my father in the head with a sculpture. He hasn't woken up. She is in prison.
Are we all going to share our tragic backstories now?
Isabella asked, although Duan Fen noticed there was less venom in her voice than before.
Is this supposed to be bonding?
Einar shrugged. Maybe. I want you to trust me, Isabella. I thought it might help if you knew where I came from. Isabella leaned back and crossed her arms, considering this. Maybe Einar was telling this story for Isabella's benefit, but Duan Fen was curious too.
What happened then? She asked. How did the Foundation find you?
During the invasion, there were other members of Moke Pro, like my parents, started rounding up human guard on Cetricus Ra's behalf, Einar replied. But then, the Mogatorians lost. Moke Pro failed. Many of them were running scared. However, Moke Pro knew the identities of some human guard. One woman had the idea to snatch these guard up, to hoard us before Earth Guard could be formed, to use us for profit. That woman was Bea Barnaby.
You're wrong about Nigel, by the way, Isabella snapped. He didn't have a clue his parents were involved in that.
Duan Fen had heard this Nigel boy brought up before. The son of the executive. She had heard the story about how Einar almost killed him. She watched him closely now, saw the shadow in his eyes. Shame.
I believe you, Einar said. I was so angry. I wanted to hurt him, to hurt B. I assumed he was a spy. That was foolish of me. After all, I was ignorant of my parents' evil deeds, until they tried to kill me. Why should Nigel be any different? The two of us are a lot alike, really.
Isabella snorted.
No, you aren't. Well, we have a lot in common, Einar said. The Barnabys took me in. They helped me train my legacies. Granted, the way they used me, taking me to board meetings, negotiations, auctions, and having me manipulate the outcomes. It was always for their benefit. But they made me think they really cared. B, especially. I was alone in this world, and she felt like a mother.
Their waiter arrived with a basket of bread and some olive oil. During his speech, Einar's eyes had filled with water. He took a moment to blot at his face with his napkin. Isabella scrutinized him. Duan Fen watched them both, taking it all in.
I can't tell if you're full of shit or not,
Isabella said, tearing loose a chunk of bread.
Lagrimas de crocodilo.
I'm being honest, Einar said, recovering smoothly. After months with her, I think B realized how powerful I was becoming, that I was too dangerous to keep close. She started sending me on more fieldwork, keeping her distance. I began to realize how disposable I was. In the end, our legacies will always make us a threat to them. The humans. That's why the Foundation exists. That's why the Academy exists.
You act like they're the same thing, Isabella said,
Not the same thing, but part of the same system.
Einar leaned forward, lowering his voice.
Your academy is guarded by peacekeepers armed with anti-guard technology. Those weapons are manufactured by Sidal Corp, a company whose owner has a standing arrangement with the Foundation. Sidal develops his weapons using alien materials he buys from the Foundation. He tests them on guard that the Foundation rents him. And then he turns around and sells those weapons to both the Foundation and Earthguard. Everyone benefits, except for us.
You know everything, Isabella said with a snort. But the Academy is not in on this conspiracy.
Ignorance doesn't make them less complicit.
You want to talk about complicit, Cabral?
Duan Fen interjected before the argument could go any further. She thought it best if they avoided making a scene in this fancy restaurant, and she was also genuinely curious.
What is it like?
She asked.
Your academy.
Good, I guess, Isabella said, swallowing. The question had caught her off guard.
Boring. They try to teach us stuff. Treat us like kids. Really dangerous kids.
She glanced in Einar's direction and scowled.
Whatever. I'm not in love with the place, but there are some good people there who actually want to help us guard. And we don't really have...
She trailed off, staring down at the crumbs on her plate. Duan Fen cocked her head, waiting for more. A choice, Einar said, finishing Isabella's thought.
Is that what you were going to say? That you don't really have a choice?
Isabella glared at him.
So what if I was?
What if there was another option? Einar asked. One where you were free. Where you didn't need to do the bidding of some organization.
Isabella let out a huff of breath, then turned to look at Duan Fen.
You buy into all this?
Duan Fen fingered her crystal water glass, considering her words.
When I first got my legacies, I tried to use them to help myself. When I was discovered, I was put to work. First, for Bangkok gangsters. Later, for the Foundation. Not until Einar found me did I really feel in control. Instead, we must learn to rely on each other.
Einar folded his hands in front of him and flashed a satisfied smile. Isabella's eyes narrowed, and she studied Duan Fen's face, perhaps looking for signs that she was being controlled. But these emotions were Duan Fen's own. She couldn't remember the last time she had spoken so much, or so plainly. It felt good. Their meals came. The three of them ate in silence, all of them considering what had been said before. Only when they were nearly finished did Einar nod his head in the direction of the restaurant's bar.
She's here, he said to Isabella.
Isabella feigned a stretch, peering in the direction Einar had indicated.
Yeah, I see her.
We'll follow your lead on this one,
Einar said to Isabella. Tell us what you want us to do. They hadn't come to this fancy restaurant only to eat dinner. Who would travel all the way to Florida just for that?
Chapter 30. Taylor Cook. Bayan Olzhgi Province, Mongolia. Never in Taylor's grimmest nightmares would she have imagined a scenario where she'd be running towards a Mogadorian warship. And yet, here she was. Blaster fire burned the air around her. Taylor was pulled along with the pack of mercenaries towards the cover of the warship. She hated the Moogs more than anything in that moment. hated them for making her fight alongside the Foundation. A streak of energy took the legs out from beneath one of her escorts, and he fell screaming in the snow. Taylor tried to go back for him, but the XO had a tight grip on her arm and shoved her ahead. Looking over her shoulder, she saw two Moogs descend on the soldier as he tried to find his feet. These ones didn't have blasters. They had swords. Serrated, silver, nasty things. They plunged the weapons into the soldier, and then started stripping him of his gear. The XO hit Taylor in the chest with something. A pistol. His secondary weapon.
"You know how to use that?" he asked.
"I've seen movies," she replied.
They took cover in what used to be the warship's docking bay, hiding behind smashed Mogadorian skimmers that had already been stripped for parts. The mercenaries were efficient, setting up a perimeter and providing cover fire for their comrades who were still exposed. Taylor joined in, squeezing off bullets into the darkness, not sure if she was hitting any Mogadorians. When her clip was empty, she used her telekinesis, twisting Moog weapons away and flinging them into the night. A stray blast shaved a panel off the skimmer Taylor was hiding behind. It came down right on her head. She was lucky, a glancing blow, but she was still cut. New warmth seeped into her hair, which was already frozen with sweat, blood trickling down into one of her eyes. She fell onto her butt, more stunned than anything. The XO spotted her immediately.
"Esset is hurt! Get to the hill inside!"
"Stop," Taylor mumbled, as another mercenary grabbed her under the arms and dragged her aboard the warship proper.
"I'm fine. I'll heal it."
The soldier didn't listen. He dumped her inside the warship, leaving her next to a pile of canisters and broken gears. Taylor stumbled to her feet. She touched the cut on her head and let her legacy do its work, cringing at the cold nugget of emptiness that formed within her whenever she used her healing on herself. A little woozy from the knock on the skull, she nonetheless started back towards the sounds of fighting. A noise stopped her in her tracks. Was that a girl's voice? It definitely was. Taylor couldn't quite make out the words, but that was definitely someone calling out. It was coming from deeper inside the warship. Did the Foundation have a prisoner here? With a glance back at the battle, Taylor followed the sound of the voice through the hulking ship's skeletal remains. Her path was illuminated in patches by the glow of the floodlights shining through the cracks in the ship's roof. She picked her way across debris. Broken Moog blasters, torn radiation suits, empty packs of cigarettes. As she got closer, Taylor realized the voice was speaking a language she didn't understand. In fact, it wasn't one she'd heard before. At least, not until that night. The harsh and sharp syllables were Mogadorian. Taylor got low, wary now that she'd stumbled into a trap. She relaxed as she rounded a corner and entered a vast corridor. At the far end was a blinking communication array, somehow undamaged during the ship crash. The voice emanated from there. Whether it was a live broadcast or a recording, Taylor couldn't tell. As Taylor listened, the Mogadorian girl switched from her guttural language to fluid English.
"This is Vonteza Eo Atet, true-born daughter of the dead General Eo Atet, and current commander of the Mogadorian warship Osiris."
The Moog did everything in her power to sound formal and lofty, but Taylor could tell that she was young, despite her big titles.
"We remain in our defensive position behind the Earth's moon, as we have for the last 400 days. Our supplies begin to run low. If there is any section of the fleet still receiving, please respond to our transmission."
Taylor raised an eyebrow. She'd heard about this. During the invasion, the guard had briefly convinced the Mogadorian fleet that Cetricus Ra was dead. All hell had broken loose. Some warships held strong, while others fought against each other, their commanders vying for the role of beloved leader. One ship had even retreated into space. Apparently, that warship was still hanging around up there, with this young-sounding Vontezza in control.
"If John Smith or any of the other Lorik are listening," Vontezza continued, "I wish to meet with you under the flag of peace. What is left of the Mogadorian people have no stomach for further war."
Based on the Mogs attacking the mercenaries outside, Taylor didn't think that was necessarily true. Vontezza's message began once again in Mogadorian. A recording, then. Taylor took a step towards the console, and her foot squelched down into something warm and sticky. At first glance, it looked like the floor of the room was covered in a massive oil slick. But the stuff warming around on Taylor's foot wasn't oil. It was thicker and gummier. She took a hurried step back, worried the ooze would eat through her footwear. She noticed the vats then. Huge tanks lined up against the walls, all of them broken open. The black gunk had flowed forth from them. Squinting, Taylor thought she could make out pale shapes floating in the dark bog. Were those half-formed Mogadorian bodies? Taylor had no doubt this was what the Foundation was out here collecting. The stuff looked exactly like the sickness she'd seen under the soldier's skin. Some toxic creation of the Mogadorians. What did the Foundation want with that?
"They're falling back!"
Taylor heard a soldier shout. The sound of gunfire was waning. The battle was won. She didn't have long to do what she needed to do. Of the 50 men who left for the night shift, only 31 made it back to camp. It could have been less. Taylor, exhausted now, eyes sunken and heavy, still managed to heal a few dire cases on the way back. The look on Jiao's face when Taylor appeared in their tent, joining the soldiers as they came for healing, was priceless. Taylor must have looked crazy, haggard, with dried blood smeared on one side of her face, her blonde hair tinted crimson. She could tell that Jiao wanted to ask her questions, but didn't dare. The XO hovered nearby, not letting Taylor out of his sight. Vincent didn't say anything either. He didn't meet Taylor's gaze. He paid attention only to the wounded soldiers who stepped up in front of him. Taylor took off her boots and made Jiao examine her feet. None of the black oil had crept in.
"She's clean,"
Jiao reported to the XO. She waved her hand at Taylor's messed-up appearance and bone-weary posture.
"Nothing I can do about the rest. She needs sleep."
"Not yet," the XO replied, gently taking Taylor by the arm.
The XO led her out. Some of the men gave her appreciative nods as she passed. Because she'd saved their lives? Or were they simply acknowledging that she'd fought alongside them? Taylor ended up alone in the XO's tent. He let her sit on his cot, propped up against some pillows. Her whole body ached. She struggled to keep her eyes open as the XO paced back and forth. He accessed a tablet and placed a video call. B. Her hair was pinned up, and she wore a drab nightgown. They'd woken her up.
"What is it?"
"We had an incident," the XO reported.
He went through the details of the Mogadorian ambush, the number of casualties, and the damage to the site. He explained that Taylor had been out there with the men.
Taylor kept her eyes on B, saw a hot glimmer of rage appear in the twist of her lips. She was mad at the XO. His negligence had endangered one of her most valuable assets. When the XO finished his summary of events, B regarded Taylor. Her face was a mask now, calm and collected.
"Are you all right, darling?" she asked.
Taylor nodded.
"How did you end up out there?" "One of the soldiers. McLaughlin."
Taylor allowed her voice to be shaky. It would make the lies more convincing.
"I hadn't finished healing him before, because he was out of line. The XO was there. He saw. He came to our tent. He took me. Made me heal him on the way to the warship site. Then, I don't know. I don't know what else he planned to do."
She felt a little guilty besmirching McLaughlin's memory. But he was dead. He wouldn't mind.
"This soldier, where is he?"
B asked the XO coldly.
"Dead in the ambush, Mom."
"Good."
B took a cleansing breath.
"Can the excavation continue?"
"I'll need some reinforcements, Mom," the XO responded. "Lost some men tonight. And I'm not sure how many more of those things are out there."
"Hmm."
B pursed her lips.
"The samples you've gathered so far already have a buyer, and I can't tolerate a delay. Select a few trusted men and bring what you've gathered to my location. The rest can stay until reinforcements are available."
Taylor let loose a small moan and shuddered. It wasn't entirely disingenuous. The thought of any more time in Mongolia seemed like a nightmare.
"And bring Ms. Cook along," B added sympathetically. "I think she's seen enough action for one tour."
Before, back on the Mogadorian warship, Taylor took McLaughlin's satellite phone out of her coat. She breathed a sigh of relief that it hadn't been damaged in all the fighting. She punched in a number that she'd memorized a couple of months ago when this plan was first hatched. A number for a cell phone that Professor Nine promised would get answered at any time, day or night. Ring. Ring.
"Where's the asset?"
someone shouted.
"Where did you put her?"
They were looking for her. The battle had ended.
"Come on. Come on,"
Taylor murmured, edging back into the shadows. Ring. Ring.
"Find her!"
the XO yelled.
Ring. Ring.
"Hello?" a young man answered.
"It's me," Taylor said, tears springing into her eyes. "I don't have long. Please hurry."
"Put the phone up to your arm." Taylor did as she was told, putting the phone against her forearm, right where there would have been a recent surgery scar. That is, if Taylor hadn't healed the wound herself. She could still hear the guy's voice on the phone, though it took on a different quality now. Tinny and robotic.
"Activate,"
he said. That's what it sounded like when Sam Good used his legacy to talk to machines.
"Did it work?"
Taylor asked, putting the phone back to his ear.
"Yes," Sam said. "We see you."
The Foundation scans hadn't discovered Taylor's locator chip because it hadn't been active yet. Now it was. A flashlight beam swept down Taylor's corridor. She pitched the phone into the Mogadorian ooze without saying goodbye and stumbled in the direction of the searching soldiers.
"I'm here,"
she called.
"I'm here."
Chapter 31. Caleb Crane, Melbourne, Florida. Caleb woke up at dawn and got dressed as quietly as possible. While the rest of Seidel's mansion slept, he crept outside and started to jog down the beach. The cold spray from the ocean tickled his skin. He kept up a steady pace until he was clear of Seidel.